So the title of this evening's talk is It's All About the Glass. It's all about the glass. Do you ever think about your life and marvel at how lucky you've been? I do. I think about this planet with its 8 billion people. And the chances that I would be born in a first world country with access to good shelter, nutritious food, top quality medical care, safe drinking water, laws to keep us safe, police to ensure that they're enforced. And not only a first world country, but a country with a welfare system that ensures that everyone has an income and access to support. A country with a nice climate, not too hot, not too cold. Incredible beauty, a great education system for everyone. And a government that responds sensibly and quickly to a pandemic. Recently, I was reading a book about a boy who grew up in Maoist China. And he was living with starvation, with no medical care, no sanitation. Their clothes, the children's clothes, were made from scraps. There was no tolerance of religion or any kind of spiritual life. And they were in constant fear of being shot by the Red Guards, who were they were being watched by. So incredible hardship. And when this boy, as a young man, moved to Beijing, he experienced his first shower. And he couldn't believe the sensation of warm water running all over his body. Imagine that. It was the most amazing thing that he'd ever felt. So myself and my loved ones have largely been healthy and lived happy, reasonably long lives. Personally, I've been through an earthquake, but I didn't lose anyone close to me, and my house didn't fall down or fill with silt. I was really one of the lucky ones. And so when I reflect on my life, I sometimes wonder how it is that I've been blessed with my life instead of someone else's. I feel so incredibly fortunate. After last summer's fires in Australia, and having an Australian friend visit me, and seeing what a blessed relief she found. The cool greenness of the forest, just to experience the cool air. And it really woke me up to how incredibly precious and beautiful the coolness of a forest is. Suddenly, I really appreciated the things that I normally take for granted about living in a temperate climate. And then, after reading an article on the front page of the Christchurch Press, shortly after that, about the rising wildfire risk warning for New Zealand, it really came home to me that, those forests, those things I take for granted, might not be there forever, and that New Zealand is also at risk. And I was driving back from Golden Bay after a wonderful holiday with my husband. And the climate emergency has more and more infiltrated my consciousness over recent times, the severity and the imminence of it, to the extent that we've both decided to stop international flying and to really limit even our domestic air travel to doing things that are actually really important. And so I was reading this really interesting book about Maoist China. And I was quite tempted to read it as we drove back to Christchurch from Golden Bay. And then I kind of woke up and realized that we were traveling through the most gorgeous scenery, majestic mountains, lush green bush, stunning fields of golden grass, crystalline, pure mountain air. And I realized I didn't want to miss it. I don't know whether I will ever see that again. I probably will, and I intend to, but I just don't know. None of us do. And it all feels so incredibly precious. And maybe that's happened for you too, that you've felt like that. Many of you have been speaking this week of coming into connection with nature, enjoying the beautiful feeling of grass underfoot, or communion with a tree or a plant. And many of you have spoken of noticing the beauty of these things and how that brought a sense of ease, of spaciousness, of happiness, of expansiveness in those moments of appreciation. So tonight I'd like to reflect on appreciation or gratitude, which can come spontaneously or naturally out of paying mindful attention to our experience, and which we can equally choose to cultivate, as we did in the beautiful practice with Jill this morning. I had an interesting experience of spontaneous gratitude some years ago. I was in India and I was traveling, can't quite remember where I was traveling from, but I was traveling to Varanasi, and I'd just been on a retreat. And so retreat mind was still quite strong. Presence. And the trains in India, I don't know if you've ever traveled on an Indian train, but they have these sash windows. They're about that, you know, that sort of size, and they go up and they latch. And so just as we came towards Varanasi and we were just crossing the bridge over the Ganges, and I pushed the sash window up to get a better look. And I had my hand resting on the window ledge. And what I didn't realize was that, as with a lot of things about Indian trains, the latch was actually broken and the window fell on my finger. And I broke my finger and cut the flesh, this finger, cut the flesh, you know, almost down to the bone. And there was blood, and, you know, my friends who were on the train kind of got me off the train because we pulled into the station just then. And it was really interesting. My first thought was, wow, I'm so grateful that I didn't chop my finger off. At the time, my work was, I was a pianist. So fingers were kind of important. And then I was grateful that it wasn't my head in the window. That was the next thought. Gosh, thank goodness it wasn't my head in the window. And I was really grateful that I didn't have my finger a little further out, or the window would have fallen on the joint instead of partway between the joints. I was grateful that I had friends with me that got me off the train. And I was really grateful for the Tibetan Medical Center nurses who cleaned and bandaged it. And it was really funny how a traumatic experience like that can bring out spontaneous gratitude. It seems to also be a common experience for people when they experience natural disaster. Once they've adjusted to the shock and just dusted themselves off, taken stock of the damage, they often say, oh, thank goodness it wasn't worse. Maybe you've had an experience of that. And we suddenly, it's like we suddenly wake up to our blessings in those moments. Gratitude for having escaped more lightly than we could have, or more lightly than others did. And in that, a willingness to help others and to stand back until those worse than ourselves have been helped. I'm certainly that way in the earthquake here in Christchurch for many, many people. So gratitude has played a key role in our successful evolution. Gratitude points our love and goodwill outwards towards others. It feeds trust when we acknowledge the times that we've been able to count on each other. And that supports connection and strengthens relationships, which we need to survive. We're so reliant on other people and our natural world. Interconnected parts of this great web of life, where each and every being, plants, animals, humans, is uniquely valuable. We're really a community of mutual aid. And Indigenous cultures in particular often still have a strong culture of gratitude, of connecting with the natural world and with their community, that which supports and nourishes them with gratitude. And one of my teachers, Sabana, who lives in Sydney, talks often about spending time with an Aboriginal elder called Uncle Max. And I think she's been on like workshops with him. And first thing in the morning, they'll all go to the river and they'll stand there and spend, Uncle Max will spend 40 minutes saying, good morning sun, good morning sky, mother sun and father sky, I can't quite remember, but 40 minutes welcoming the world and with appreciation. Wonderful. We've actually evolved specific areas of our brain dedicated to experiencing and expressing gratitude. It's actually an inherent quality in each of us that's triggered and expressed spontaneously in a variety of different contexts, a natural human response. And every single language in the world has a way of saying thank you. But gratitude is not necessarily the natural tendency of our mind in any given situation, is it? Even though it's made us successful from an evolutionary point of view, other qualities have equally influenced our success. And one of those is looking for the negative, for what's not right. And we're all here because we had ancestors who scanned the horizon for danger and were prepared when it came. They didn't just assume they were safe and go around feeling grateful all the time. Oh, how wonderful, I'm being eaten by a lion. No. And we're here because our ancestors were successful at seeing that. So our brain is hardwired to notice the negative and the dangerous, and negative experiences equally are hardwired into our brains very easily, ready for the next time. And neuroscience, modern neuroscience, has found that positive experiences take much more effort to hardwire into our neural patterning. So it's said that the mind is like Teflon for positive experiences and like Velcro for negative experiences. So we can also practice gratitude and cultivate it deliberately as a way to incline our minds towards something more beneficial. I've been doing a gratitude practice now for a number of years, And at night when we go to bed, my husband Axel and I say to each other, tell me three things that you're grateful for today. And when we first started, it was just one thing. And I noticed that when we first started, that if I'd had a difficult day, it could be quite hard to think of something. My mind was focused more on what was wrong, what I needed to do about it, protecting myself. And to do the gratitude practice, I had to actually reorient the mind. But with practice, the blessings became more and more obvious until I couldn't just stop at three things. There were so, so many. I also started noticing them in the moment, during the day, not just later at night reflecting back, but when they happened. And my mind actually started to look for things to be grateful for in the moment, instead of looking for things to be depressed about, or disappointed with, or angry with, or upset about. My mind actually started to point in a different direction. You may have heard of the Benedictine monk, Brother David Steindl-Rast, who has kind of made gratitude his life's practice. And he says gratitude has two essential qualities. The first one is appreciation. You recognize that something is valuable to you, which has nothing to do with monetary worth, and you affirm its goodness. And the second quality, he says, is that it's freely given to you. For those of you who like words, the Latin root of the word gratitude is grata or gratia, a given gift. And from this same root, we get the word grace, which means a gift freely given that's unearned. Cultural anthropologist Angelus Arian says, gratitude is essentially the recognition of the unearned increments of value in one's experience. The acknowledgement of the positive things that come our way that we did not actively work towards or ask for. So a gift. And one of the lovely things about gratitude is that it brings us into the present moment. Have you noticed that? Robert Holden says, the real gift of gratitude is that the more grateful you are, the more present you become. So we can check that out for ourselves. And more than that, gratitude allows us to celebrate the present. We're not just observing it. When there's gratitude there, we're actually participating in the moment. And when we do that, we magnify the pleasure and the goodness. And it's really interesting that gratitude frees us from the trap of time. Because one can only be grateful now, and now, and now. And what does that mean? Every heart longs for happiness which is lasting. And Brother David says, all of us think that we know what we mean by now. But surprising as it may sound, this now is eternity. We tend to imagine the now as the short stretch of time between past and future. But as long as it's a stretch of time, we can cut it in half. When we do, half is not now because it is no more. And the other half is not now, because it is not yet. So where then is the now? The surprising answer is, the now is not in time. Not only is the now not in time, time is in the now. When the future comes, it will be now. And any past event becomes now as we remember it. There is only one now. It cannot be multiplied. It simply is. The now is the opposite of time. In fact, this is Augustine's definition. Eternity is the now that does not pass away. A happiness anchored in the now is eternal. This is precisely the happiness that our heart desires. Eternal and unassailable, because it is beyond the reach of time, time the destroyer. So this simple practice of gratitude anchors us in the moment. In every moment, we have the opportunity to be grateful. There's been quite a bit of research on gratitude and the effects of it, and it has many stabilizing and healing effects. So for a number of years now, I've been facilitating a course on awakening joy created by James Baraz. And the course is about cultivating wholesome states through practices which bring happiness and well-being, and hardwiring them into our neurocircuitry so they become habitual. And the gratitude practice is one of those. And a few years back, I was talking with James, who's been teaching this course, I think, for close to 2 decades now. And he was thinking that with the climate crisis, maybe it was time to stop running it and instead focused on that as being more urgent. And I think I'd done it 3 or so times by then. And I'd been to an EcoSattva course about opening to the climate emergency and the grief that comes. And in that EcoSattva course, the first question we were asked to discuss was, what resources you? And I really noticed how much some of the awakening joy practices had resourced me to open to the horror and despair and all the difficult emotions that come up when we face up to what's happening in our world, as we did this afternoon. And I said to James, you mustn't stop, because that's such an important resource, that course, that people are going to need. We need practices that will help us hold ourselves together, be strong, and bring connection, and that develop the heart and increase its capacity. So there are a number of practices which build that resilience, that give us strength and resource to deal with life's challenges. And one of those is gratitude. And research confirms this. Grateful people are more stress resilient. In the face of adversity, trauma, suffering, they recover faster. And in the aftermath of trauma, PTSD or serious anxiety, gratitude gives people a helpful perspective from which to take on life events. So gratitude is a stance that we can voluntarily take, and one we can adopt through the difficult seasons of life as well as the good ones. The daily practice of gratitude keeps the heart open, regardless of what comes our way. So Brother David Steindl Rast says, but can one be grateful for everything that happens? Certainly not. One cannot be grateful for war, violence, oppression, exploitation, betrayal, and many other calamities. We cannot be grateful for all a given moment brings us. Yet in any moment, we can be grateful for something. One can be grateful in every moment for the opportunity it offers. Opportunity is the key word. The gift within every gift is opportunity. To enjoy the gift or make something of it. Many things for which we cannot be grateful as such do give us an opportunity to learn, to reconsider, and to grow. Only years later do we sometimes realize that an event that seemed an unmitigated disaster turned out to be an opportunity for life-changing growth, and so was a great gift after all. I've certainly experienced that, looking back and thinking, wow, I never ever thought in my wildest dreams that I would be grateful for that. So maybe you've had that experience too. Joanna Macy tells a story of a young woman watching the bombing of a refugee camp and the anger and distress she felt. And then for a moment, she thought of all the reporters who covered the story and brought it to the world. When she thought about their courage, she felt grateful. Her gratitude reminded her that she wasn't the only one who cared. And in case that sounds a little too close to denial for comfort, it's important to feel the pain, the anger and the despair. It's more that we're trying to see the whole picture, which contains both positive and negative, including the positive and responding to it gratefully brings extra resource to us to cope with the negative. Acknowledging the positive lifts us up so that our hearts have the capacity to open to the pain. So some benefits, just a quick run through of some of the benefits that research has discovered gratitude brings. It makes us happier. 5 minutes of gratitude increases our happiness by over 10%. It makes us more optimistic by 5 to 15%. It enhances empathy and reduces aggression. It connects us more to the spiritual dimension of life. A 35% reduction in depressive symptoms was seen while daily gratitude was being practiced. It increases patience and consequently improves decision making. It reduces blood pressure and hypertension and improves our sleep. It improves overall physical health. Grateful people report fewer aches or pains, a general feeling of health, exercise more regularly, and have more frequent checkups with their doctor. It makes people like us. Grateful people have more friends and better relationships. Grateful people are seen as more trustworthy. It increases the social support available to us in difficult times. And because it also leads to lower stress and lower depression levels, gratitude also lessens the need for social support in the first place. And it leads to generosity. When we feel we have enough, the natural response is to want to share. At a deeper level, with deep levels of gratitude, we know that the giver is none other than the receiver, that it's simply life giving to itself. So it's sometimes said, gratitude is the in-breath, generosity is the out-breath. And the benefits of gratitude build on themselves over time. So brain scans of people assigned a task to stimulate gratitude show lasting changes in the prefrontal cortex that heighten their sensitivity to future experiences of gratitude. So the beneficial effects snowball. So it sounds pretty good, huh? Why aren't we doing it? Why aren't we all doing this every day? And as somebody said earlier, may have been today or yesterday, we're embedded in this materialistic culture, which encourages constant wanting and accumulating and sees possessions as the source of happiness. The social messages that we receive can leave us constantly feeling that sense of lack. There's even, I discovered, an advertiser's law of dissatisfaction. The job of advertisers is to create dissatisfaction. If people are happy with how they look, with who they are, where they are in life, what they have, they just aren't customer potential, unless you make them unhappy. Most cosmetic ads feature beautiful women, promising that you too can look like this if you use the product. The customer is no longer happy then with how they look, and they're now motivated to buy in the promise of change, even though they will never be able to stack up against the ideal. So billions of dollars go into these messages, which encourage the arising of self-focus, self-interest, self-absorption. They narrow us into ourselves. And these messages diminish feelings of self-worth and promote feelings like envy and cynicism. Oh, I'll never get there. We're much less happy, actually, now than we were in past decades when people had less. Depression and associated social ills like substance addiction and debt have skyrocketed over the last few decades. It's not the most fertile ground for gratitude to spontaneously arise in. And in fact, those feelings of narcissism, envy, and cynicism that the advertising promotes have actually been called thieves of gratitude. Brother David says, if we're not grateful, then no matter how much we have, we will not be happy, because we will always want to have something else and something more. And in a desperately sad example of this, J.D. Rockefeller, one of the world's richest men, was asked once, how much would be enough? How much money for him to have? How much would be enough? And he said, just a little more. So we really are going against the flow here. Unless we have a naturally grateful disposition, it's really helpful to actively cultivate it. And in fact, as Jill said earlier, gratitude blocks negative emotions which can destroy happiness. So envy, resentment, regret. You cannot be envious and grateful at the same time. Try it. You can't. They're incompatible feelings. Confucius said, I was complaining that I had no shoes till I met a man who had no feet. From envy to gratitude. So Brother David also reminds us that gratefulness is the inner gesture of giving meaning to our life by receiving life as a gift. Receiving life as a gift gives it meaning. We've been given it. It's precious and wonderful. When we receive life as a gift, we're grateful for simply being alive. We receive our life as a gift. And I found this wonderful piece by Christy Nelson called It's All About the Glass, which expresses this beautifully. So here's what she says. If, as they say, life is like a glass, and we are the way we are, and we are the way we see it, there are days when things can feel pretty darned empty, half empty at best. And then there are days when we revel in the glass's hopeful half fullness. Some days, if we're really lucky, the water seems to rise towards the edge of the glass, leaving the half-empty mark behind. And on certain special days, the glass feels full to overflowing. Like anyone, I love days of great fullness and all the moments which hover vividly at the brim. And I dearly love it when I feel like a glass half full kind of person, optimistic, celebratory, upbeat. But as I have grown to humbly understand, feelings of fullness are not consistent, predictable, or assured. I can always turn on the faucet, but as we know, evaporation happens. It seems to me that underneath all the inevitable risings and fallings, feeling deeply content or joyful is not actually about how full the glass is or seems. It's about being grateful for having a glass at all. Being grateful for simply having a glass is key, because without it, half of anything wouldn't matter. Without it, life would either be a puddle or thin air. The glass is a container for our experience, all experience. And some people seem to know that noticing and being grateful for this container dwarfs everything and can turn any and all contents in our favour. What I know is that when the glass of life itself feels like enough to me, the dry times and the overflowing times can come and go, and my happiness remains more steady and unconditional. My well-being seems to spring from a deeper source. In this state, I'm able to access that balance point of equanimity and equilibrium. I feel held by a container, full even when the glass is empty. Many of us spend our lives seeking, accumulating, and counting good times and reasons for gratitude as one way to shift the equation from lack to sufficiency, from half empty to half full. But gratitude for individual moments and things that come and go can keep us in a relentless pursuit of more. And on some level, we know that more is just as subject to evaporation as less. Perhaps this is why we long and need to listen to the innumerable voices of people who stare into the face of illness and the end of life with grace, grit, and gratitude. We know that they know what matters. And most of us are longing to know and be filled up by what really matters in our lives. In the midst of a million forces pulling us towards settling for just one more drop. Knowing that our lives are incomprehensibly precious, fragile, and fleeting reminds us to stop in our tracks and take stock every moment of what matters, how much is enough, and where wisdom would direct our attention. Gratefulness is about being able to notice and appreciate the gift of the glass itself amidst the ups and downs. It's about knowing in our molecules that life is a gift, no matter how empty we may feel. I think gratefulness is about understanding that in each and every moment that we notice we are alive, we are succeeding in creating a life that truly hovers vividly at the brim. Because in the end, it's all about the glass, not what's in it. So recognizing that what arises and passes in our life is not able to satisfy because it's impermanent. Just being grateful for our very life. A warm-hearted acceptance of what is and an equanimity that comes. And I think an important aspect of gratitude is the way it lifts us out of ourself. It widens our focus away from self-interest, self-absorption, from being fixated on our own issues. We recognize that the source of these gifts is outside of ourselves. Even when we're grateful for something about ourselves, like a skill or talent or strength or quality that we have, it's likely that others played a part in its development. Our teachers, our parents who paid for those teachers, people who wrote books, people who role modeled that quality to us. Even our health is dependent on the genetics that were passed down to us. So gratitude expands our view. Ah, yes, the world. Not just me, the center of my own universe, but the world and me as a tiny integral part of that. Do you know the poet Mary Oliver? She's so inspiring in this regard. And she writes, "When it's over, I want to say, all my life I was a bride married to amazement. I was the bridegroom taking the world in my arms." And Mary died recently, but apparently she really did live her life just like that. And she went on, "My work is loving the world. Here the sunflowers, there the hummingbird. Equal seekers of sweetness. Here the quickening yeast, there the blue plums. Here the clam deep in the speckled sand. Are my boots old? Is my coat torn? Am I no longer young and still not half perfect? Let me keep my mind on what matters, which is my work, which is mostly standing still and learning to be astonished. The Phoebe, the delphinium, the sheep in the pasture, and the pasture, which is mostly rejoicing, since all ingredients are here. Which is gratitude, to be given a mind and a heart, and these body clothes, a mouth with which to give shouts of joy to the moth and the wren, to the sleepy dug-up clam, telling them all, over and over, how it is that we live forever. So when we're grateful, this small me seems so much less important. Gratitude and the humility and love it resonates with bring us to a sense of spaciousness, tenderness, open-heartedness. The silent, beautiful spaciousness at the heart of who we are is also the source of vast love and gratitude. There is no division between ourselves and the whole world. The whole world is in our heart, and our heart is the whole world. And the only response that makes sense to me then is to give thanks, to bow down with thanks, to just keep saying thank you for as long as I have a voice, to dissolve myself in that appreciation. And in that deep communion with all of life, there is no object of gratitude and no one who is grateful. There is just gratitude, the full flowering of an unbound heart. So we'll just sit quietly for a few minutes.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.